Welcome to the Gatecast.
We're off to see the wizard.
Presented by Alan and Mike.
Lucy, I'm home.
I was going to do my living room like this.
I am not Lucy.
Well, sir, my recommendation is that anyone attempting to leave the mountain should be shot on sight.
Good evening to a frankly quite stunningly sunny, or as I refer to it, evil yellow light which burns, evening in, well, the west of Ireland. And also, how is the middle part of England that you're in?
Good evening, everybody. It's quite a nice day. We've had a few showers. That's been surprisingly nice.
Nary a shower in sight. This is what you might call our wrap-up episode, so we don't do a sort of... I don't know if Mike might feel inclined to drop in audio clips. I suppose it depends how much we stumble and how much dead air there is, and if we only end up with about 15 minutes of usable material, there might be a few audio clips in there.
If we only end up with 15 minutes, I'm scrapping the whole idea.
Okay, sorry.
Well, the last time we tried this, we got about 5 minutes, so...
Fair enough. So do we officially remove Scott's name from the podcast now?
Oh, yeah. He didn't contribute the whole second season. Shame on him.
Right. Yes. Well, he has been working like 65 to 70-hour weeks.
Yeah.
Scott, our former...
And so making a living's got to come first.
Oh, yes, especially when it went so long without making a living.
Yep.
So I'm glancing down the various episodes, and I'm trying to see. Mike sent me a kind suggestion as to some vague guidelines as opposed to the completely mad random thing which we did last time, which really didn't work.
No. If we can just have a quick couple of minutes on each episode and a few thoughts.
One is focusing and dredging the I'm feeling around the tea tray of memory for the teacup of recall. Or something. I'm badly misquoting and paraphrasing Pratchett there.
Or just open a website that's got an episode list on it.
I have an episode list. I'm just trying to think about the episodes.
Oh, right.
Okay, then, from the beginning, Serpent's Lair Part 2 opened from a sort of reasonable cliffhanger.
It was a good Season 1 cliffhanger. So we got the ships coming to attack Earth, and SG-1 stranded on the ships. How will they get out of it?
And the idea, I mean, it's an interesting... I suppose it depends how cynical you are. Had it been cancelled at that point, I'm sure they could have just filmed it that they didn't actually get off the ships.
Oh, I'm sure they could have sorted something out.
I mean, and it would have been... It's a beginning, but it's also an ending. With a few small... I'm just going sort of alternate scenarios here, but with a few small edits, they could have blown up Apophis and Corel and the ships, and pretty much the whole thing goes splat.
Oh, yeah, just adjust the digital timer. And then a nice little boom. I think one thing about working for Showtime, they probably knew about a second season well in advance anyway. You know, Showtime doesn't play the same games as the other networks do. If they like a series, they tell them.
One particular network, which is a three-letter swear word?
That'd be it. That'd be the one. I'm going to say ABC and NBC are catching up. They all like to get the choppers out.
Recession and the unfortunate... And I promise I won't go off on one on this. I'll be very brief. Maybe even briefer if you edit it out. The bottom line is, however much we might enjoy it and however much we might state it, television is a business. They're in it to make a profit. Shows like Stargate cost tens of thousands of dollars per minute to make. Well, probably not tens of thousands, but certainly per... I mean, even back in the time of Babylon 5, you were talking $600,000 to $800,000 an episode, and that was only 20 years ago.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Lord knows what an episode actually costs to make now. Minute for minute, the likes of, I shudder to say the name, Deal or No Deal, probably cost about 50th, and maybe even only 1% of what Stargate costs to make.
Yeah, there are sound business reasons why reality TV is so popular with networks.
It's cheap.
It's cheap.
It brings in advertising,
yep.
And it's chewing gum for the eyes. The vast majority of the population will watch it.
Yeah, more to the point, they watch it live.
Oh, yes.
Yes, they've got all the secondary revenues from voting and music contracts and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, there was an implied Big Brother reference there.
Was it?
Well, either Big Brother or X Factor, I suppose. Thank God that the final British series of that horrendous incursion onto television is commencing, at least, which means it will end.
Oh, yeah, but I think they're going to do another celebrity, then that'll be done. Some equally daft will take its place.
I wonder what percentage of the celebrities on I'm a Celebrity will actually have been ex-Big Brother contestants.
You're a celebrity just for being on telly.
Moving on, in the line of duty, we see our first hints and setup for the Tok'ra. This would be episode 2, where Carter is taken over by an apparent Gould, but we discover towards the end of the episode that not quite everything that we thought is actually reality.
Yeah, that's right. This episode started off with a quite spectacular battle sequence. Surprisingly good, in fact. You know, one where the teaser seemed to probably cost more than the entire rest of the episode put together.
It's all catch them at the teaser, you see. If you've got new viewers, you catch them at the teaser, you'll keep them watching for the rest of the episode. If the teaser is weak, especially with the American format where you go to an ad break, that gives them immediately after the teaser, that gives them the opportunity to change channels.
Yep, it does. And back then, no DVRs. He had a VHS, but that was it.
VHS. I remember VHS fondly. Yes. Hell, I remember Beta.
And we were satisfied with it.
Well, Beta was a better quality format.
I just mean video recording in general.
Oh, well, it enabled us for the first time to time shift.
Yeah, to actually go out into the real world, safe in the knowledge that our program was being recorded.
Assuming, of course, either the video didn't break down, the timer function didn't fail, the power cut didn't happen, or the TV signal didn't actually fail. But yeah, good teaser, good, and nicely set up. I mean, they really did, bearing in mind, Tok'ra was episode 11, and they hinted at it in episode 2. That's what you call laying threads at an almost B5 level.
Yeah, I think without any doubt, the writers planned all this out well in advance. Again, the benefit of knowing you've got a 22 episode season to play around with, and they probably knew that as long as they didn't do anything stupid, they'd have a long running series on Showtime, so they could plan ahead.
Yeah, and then Fox bought them.
Well, not really. You always say Fox a lot when in terms of Stargate, but it's not Fox.
Isn't it?
The Sci-Fi Channel, which is owned by NBC.
Ah, so you see, because it was shown on Sky One over here, I invariably tie it with Fox, because I see them as the Fox of the UK.
Oh, right. They're not, but all right.
I'm open to correction. It's interesting, though, and a little tacky. I think it would have led to whole new depths of acting for Carter if the Tok'ra, rather than the Ghoul, although at this point we thought it was a Ghoul, who took her over, was nominally male rather than nominally female.
It would have opened up some possibilities.
We could have had some interesting... I don't know. It is... I suppose this series, just to dip into a brief character arc here, we do see a fair degree of femininity on Carter's part.
Well, they do every now and again try to spruce her up a bit, but she just looks so good in fatigues. Just put, some combat pants on, a black T-shirt and a dog tags, and she's game for anything.
Oh, I really don't want to know where you're going with that. Moving on, because you said a couple of minutes on each side. Moving on to prisoners. Some good bits, some not so good bits, and some frankly bizarre, some rather throwaway bits, because we never see this planet again.
No, we don't. Or the race, although we do now. That could be a spoiler. Edit that bit out.
You've got me intrigued now. This supposedly all-powerful race. Where the hell were they when the Ori came along?
They were all praise. They welcomed the Ori.
But Linnea is very, very insidious.
Oh, yeah. Because she comes across so nice, so charming. And we only really learn what she's like after the fact. Even when one prisoner reacts so badly, she's still the sweet, almost charming grandmother type.
Oh, you can picture her sort of knitting tea cosies.
Yeah.
Admittedly, tea cosies probably laced with strychnine and with a sort of solid order of anthrax, but still, tea cosies.
Yeah. With skulls on them.
With what?
Skulls.
Yeah, but that would just be cool. Anyway, can you imagine, you know how hard it is to knit a skull?
Probably difficult. Never tried.
I have friends who knit.
Oh, my mother used to knit.
Sorry?
My mother used to knit, and I tried it once, purling and drop stitching, no, forget it.
Oh, my fifth class, which for an American audience would probably be the equivalent of 10th grade, I think. 8 years of primary school, so fifth class being year 7. So about age 11, 12, if that helps our audience. My fifth and sixth class teacher insisted, because it was a mixed school, about 35 pupils in the class, and she insisted that the boys, as well as the girls, did a knitting project.
Yeah.
You know, the joys of is it just co-educate? I can't say co-ed education because that's just wrong. My God, I must be tired. I'm actually lost for a word. Damn. I'm
mixed.
Left without a synonym.
Mixed?
Yes, mixed will do. I suppose I'm trying to pick up American words for the American portion of our audience. What they call co-ed.
Yeah.
As opposed to what? Single ed?
I don't know what you'd call it. I was going to say that there's very, very few educational establishments that are same sex or single sex.
Well, no, a lot of the military schools, I think.
Yeah, there'll be some private schools, obviously.
Yes.
But not state funded.
No. I think, you see, public school in the States is not like public school in the UK. Public school in the UK is generally private, and public school in the States is not. At least I think that's the way it works. I could be completely... I'm open to correction. But prisoners... Nice opener, aren't you? She just sort of the whole. We never see anything more about that plant again either.
That's a shame, that is, because that was a key to pretty much every problem the Earth has at the moment.
Yeah, so maybe they felt it was a bit of a Deus Ex Machina.
Well, like I said at the time, the oil companies got involved and paid someone off and nicked the specifications of it and trashed it.
In terms of script or in terms of the reality of Stargate?
The reality. Well, that created the funding for the NID.
Now, the gamekeeper.
Dwight Schultz. Love the actor. The part of the keeper, I think he played it just cheesy enough to be fun.
Oh, I just found it intensely irritating.
No, he wasn't bad. I mean, it was a nice idea. And, you know, we saw Daniel's trauma, Jack's trauma. You know, they were interesting.
Did we even see Carter? We didn't see a trauma for Carter, did we?
No. No, no talk.
Is one wonders, is Carter meant to be sort of this? Because I would imagine some form of argument with the father, teenage rebellion, early pregnancy, subsequent abortion, etc.
She led an interesting life, did she?
In my mind. Admittedly, she's naked in it a lot, but still.
Oh. Won't go there.
I'm not. Well, I've seen the DVDs of the episode where she is, and you don't actually get to see anything. Whereas if Daniel seems to get naked at the drop of a bloody hat.
Well, you know, he did that much gym work. He says, you know, I'm going to show it. I want to nude scene.
On the Daniel arc, do we see a slightly more buff Daniel towards the end of the season?
Oh, most definitely.
No, not up to sort of season 5 or season 6 levels where he's almost as bad as Teok.
I mean, near the end, when he cuts his hair short, he's almost Action Man Daniel.
So I'm thinking more G.I. Joe, Daniel.
Well, pretty much the same thing, isn't it? One's American, one's British.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, I tend not to linger over the gamekeeper because I'm not... You obviously liked it more than I did, but...
Well, yeah, more than you did, but I don't consider it one of the great episodes of the franchise.
And then we come to Need.
Yes.
Which I think we tore down sufficiently in the actual review.
Not one of the best.
Quite possibly. It's nearly getting my vote for worst episode of the season. It's warring with, I think, which one was it? I'm scrolling down. Possibly,
well,
Spirits.
We can lead that and chat about best and worst in a bit.
It's a trope at this point. It's taking the standard. It's not even a science fiction trope. It's you have one of your main cast who becomes addicted to a drug of some description and miraculously and hopelessly at war with reality to anyone who's ever attempted rehab or knows anything about drug withdrawal or addiction, manages to get in the single episode, gets an arc through sort of normal degeneration, addiction, personality change and recovery.
Well, I suppose they could argue, you know, the sarcophagus, while it does work in the same manner as a drug, it can become an addiction. It's not quite in the same... It doesn't operate the same way. You know, effects are more immediate. At the same time, if you stop using the sarcophagus, it quickly leaves your system. You know, more of a state of mind than anything else.
Yes, I mean, there are some vaguely useful bits we can take from it because you've got... The whole, this may explain the sort of megalomaniac nature of the Gould.
Yeah, almost given an excuse.
To be, they don't really need it, they're just evil. Sorry, I actually pulled myself back there, you didn't have to edit that. I mean, why do we need to explain why they're evil? They're evil.
Well, it gives, if you like, it gives them an excuse, but at the same time, they're smart enough to know what it's doing to them. Mm-hmm. And they still keep using it.
Well, it could be the whole genetic memory thing. Are we looking at addiction from sort of, because even more powerful than the addiction when the child is actually in the human womb, the mother's taking heroin or whatever.
Mm.
Are we looking at with genetic memory of the spawn, the addiction to the sarcophagus sort of comes built in?
No, because I'd imagine, you know, when we cover the Tok'ra, the you know, the original queen who pretty much gave birth to all the Tok'ra, she at some point came from a Gwald.
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to change, they can do, but most of them don't, because they live for conquest and power, and the sarcophagus both gives them the time frame to do it, plus ramps up all the aggression and everything else that they need to operate.
Mm. Moving back to, well, not so much Tok'ra, but Ghoul. We have Thor's chariot. I don't know if this is... It's a nice episode. It's a return as well. We're actually going back, and it's... I suppose it is in this season. We did some revisiting of some of the season one stuff.
Yeah.
Which indicates they're at least aware of history.
Yeah. I guess they all be cynical. You know, they're just looking at plots and saying, what can we write quickly based on this?
I thought you liked this episode.
I do like this episode. No, I mean in general terms. You know, we need so many episodes this season. We've got, you know, the new arcs are going to start, but what else can we do? We need a new character. We can go back to that episode and bring it forward. Like, you know, like Wrath of Khan going back to Space Seed.
Hmm.
You know, if you do it right, you can really create a piece of art. The fans recognise the continuity. And I think any sci-fi fantasy genre fan will appreciate that.
Oh, it's the fact that... And the other thing is... What it does is, if you've got a casual fan who's just dropping in and he sees this, which is, okay, he or she sees this, then they're going to think, oh, well, what's that referencing? And maybe I should go back and watch and, to be cynical, buy season one.
Yep, quite possibly. Great thing about Thor's Chariot, of course, is it shows the viewer that the SGC, while being the good guys, are also very careless and at times incompetent. Because they are the root cause of this invasion of this world.
Oh yeah, I mean they've made a hames of it, and I think they reference this again later.
Yeah, you know, you look at something like TNG. They go to a planet, they do something, maybe good, maybe bad, but that's it. If they do something bad, you never really see any ramifications of it.
No, because it's the giant Star Trek reset button. I recall an episode of the original Battlestar Galactica, and I'd been watching Star Trek. This original BSG, and someone dies, and the kid is upset. And I was like, oh, don't worry, they'll be alive again next week's episode. I think it was about 9 or 10. Because I've gotten so used to Star Trek, where no one really actually dies, and no characters move on or develop.
So cynical at such an early age. Because I watched Star Trek. Star Trek made me like this. And of course, the biggie from this episode, the CGI of the Asgard starship.
Yes, I think you drooled enough of that during the actual review. It's very pretty.
It is, isn't it? Gorgeous piece of work that was. And it just came down through a cloud of vapour. And
It wasn't vapour, it was big. I mean, it was appropriate, it was a ruddy thundercloud.
Well, something of its own making anyway.
Yes, but something to, I think, to a certain extent, tame the natives. I mean, I'm sure the effect wasn't necessary, but if you're coming down as the incarnation of the thunder god, you know, make an entrance.
Yeah, and you've got pseudo lightning bolts flashing out, and people vanish.
I don't know how pseudo they were.
Well, they weren't lightning bolts because they were perfectly straight lines, and they're like scanning beams. The level of technology.
Assuming they didn't kill all the Jaffa, they're just beaming them off somewhere.
No, I think they wiped them out.
Yeah, because it didn't actually look like the beaming technology, did it?
No. And if they took them, where would they keep them? And what would they do with them? Because the Gwald had broken the treaty.
Hmm. Well, of course, it goes to show that the Gwald just absolutely cannot be trusted. I mean, and they'd have continuously and quite happily sent Jaffa repeatedly to this planet.
Yeah, just on the off chance, one of them
just
got
on
through.
The off chance that something had changed.
They're only Jaffa. There's always more of them.
Yeah, you know, they breed.
Well, as long as you've got a queen to keep churning out the larval, and you've got humans or humanoids or whatever description, you've always got a warrior cast.
Well, as we discover in two episodes, we'll come back to that.
Okay.
In MO. Message in a Bottle, very self-contained, relatively low special effect episode.
Apart from walking on the moon in the teaser.
Well, yes.
True, that was pretty much a map painting with some few dots that may have been moving.
Well, okay, prop-wise, pricey. Special effect-wise, not so much. Prop-wise, quite a bit.
yeah, the skill of the cinematographer to make a room we're very familiar with look totally alien.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I was thinking prop-wise more the spacesuits.
Oh, yeah. Well, I imagine they, you know, they get them from any Hollywood warehouse. I wouldn't be surprised.
Image or something.
I was thinking of a store that actually deals with the film industry, but you couldn't buy them. Or maybe you can. I don't know. I mean, they're selling a space shuttle. Perhaps you can buy a spacesuit.
What?
Oh, yeah, you can buy a space shuttle.
Actual size?
Yeah, because they've retired them. I think about $30 million or something. But it'll cost you a fortune to ship it. I'm not kidding you. But you need either a jumbo jet set up for that or one hell of a long 18-wheeler.
Get the space shuttle for $30 million. Or pay an extra $40 million and get this free jumbo jet. Because the jumbo jet costs more than that. I think the delivery price would be $180.
That's a lot of money. Yes. But it shows you the space shuttle is, let's be honest, it's a piece of junk. It was a piece of junk when it was first made. But you ignored all that because it's a sodding flying spaceship. I can remember watching telly on flight.
Or in one unfortunate case, a giant firework.
Yeah. Imagine what they could make now if they were serious about it and use state-of-the-art technology.
There isn't the will or the sort of sufficient political pressure to do so.
Oh, no.
You know, it was purely as part of warmongering and as one-upmanship.
I say, it's a bit laughable that in terms of Britain, Ireland, the EU in general, we're not really in the game anyway. But it's quite amusing to see Americans relying on Russian rockets to get into space. You know, the world has changed quite a bit.
I think the border's been chucked out and the pieces are being picked up by the cat. So you diverted slightly from the point there with message in a bottle, but I think we've covered it adequately. I suppose it's sparking other science fiction related discussions, but if I can drag us faintly back on topic, you were saying about Jaffa, New Jaffa, which brings us nicely into family.
Oh, yes.
Now, does Ryak come under your irritating, perky kid qualification?
Well, I didn't really start to like Ryak until he got a lot older, so I suppose he does.
Mike's dislike of annoying children. And does this stem from the unfortunate trauma of having to watch Wesley Crusher?
It could be. Whoever thought, I don't know, oh God, it's been covered plenty of times. Wesley in the flying a starship, not being part of Starfleet, but still flying a starship. Can you imagine going on board your dad's aircraft carrier and him letting you steer it? I don't think it'd be done.
It's more, I think it's summed up, Wesley Crusher is summed up by that Usenet group I found in the early 90s. alt.wesley.crusher.die.die.die. And there was an MPED. There's a brief scene in which you get stabbed through the stomach by something. And that scene was gleefully posted and discussed at length.
Many an animated GIF was made.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yeah, so family, when you get Tilt going back to his home world and finding out his missus has hitched a wagon to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Who, of course, turns out to be evil and is duly zatted to disintegration.
I don't know if... No, that's not fair to... is it Frotak? He wasn't evil. You know, obviously, you can say, well, you shouldn't have gone after Tilk's missus, but Tilk was declared dead. And in their society, female alone with a child, being married or, you know, in the same household as a provider was pretty essential. And I think Frotak meant to do right by her. And he really only snapped when he saw Tilk and Dreyak with a kissing or an intimate moment.
They did kiss and he witnessed that. And like,
that really...
from Hell's Heart, I stab at the sort of...
Yeah, and of course, there was a hell of a lot of cash involved with it as well, so you can't really blame him.
Yeah, I mean, he was loaded.
Well, no, I mean the reward from Apophis returning Teal'c in.
Yes.
That helped.
The sort of Frotak equivalent to 30 pieces of silver.
Yeah. Not only that, when he married Dreyak, she looked totally different. It's a reference to the change in the actress.
Possibly because she was a different actress.
Yes. He woke up one morning and thought, boy, she's changed. My mother was right. When you marry him, they change.
Ah, the home and away effect. Where one actress was replaced, there was a 2-month gap, and the actress who replaced the actress who had been playing the character was 2 inches shorter with different coloured hair.
Uh-huh, right. And nobody said a thing.
Of course not. We're a soap opera. If you're intelligent, you wouldn't be watching it. Secrets. Some interesting setups here.
Yeah, this was a good episode. Not an A and B story, 2 A stories in this. Mm-hmm. As Jack and Sam go to Washington to get an air medal from the president, and Daniel and Tilk go to Abydos to on the 1 year anniversary of him leaving, so he can report back to his father-in-law that he hasn't found his wife, only to find that his father-in-law's found his wife.
Yeah, and it's like, you see? What good are you?
And she's pregnant, and it isn't Daniel's.
What good are you? I mean, look, not only did I find her, I found her with a child by another man. You know, be gone from my house. Your name. You think he'd react like that? Not the sort of calm and fluffy way in which he does react. For everything you see of the society in Abydos, wouldn't he be banished?
You would have thought, certainly in the movie, you know, their culture seemed very male-dominated. You know, basically, because he gave his daughter away, didn't he, to Daniel?
Yeah.
You know, he thought, oh, Daniel's either involved with Ra or in league with Ra, so give him a daughter, we'll be well in.
And then Daniel went and blew up Ra.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, bugger, what do I do now?
Well, he's killed the big god, so I think I made a good deal here.
And a little poignant moment for Sam.
Oh, yes, with her father.
Yes. Oh, by the way, I've got cancer.
Yes, pretty much just like that. And no, you don't have to come to the hospital with me. No, you don't have to stay with me. I'll see you in a few months. I'll let you know when I'm dying. Yeah, when I get taken into hospital and I'm on death's door, I'll give you a call.
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
I suppose you could argue that's a very military mindset, but you'd have thought he knew Sam enough to know that wouldn't satisfy her.
Was he using this as an excuse to find out what Sam was really doing, or more to a point, to maybe get Sam into what he saw as a proper career? But again, little threads, admittedly not waiting very long to be resolved, but more little threads for the setup of the introduction of the Tok'ra.
Yeah, and of course, Jacob was a good character.
Definite hint here with the reporter that the NID whacked them.
Oh yeah, at the time, you know, it's pretty vague, but obviously when as the next season comes along and subsequent seasons, you put two and two together and you think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Oh, come on. Is there anything you don't think even at this point Mayborn isn't capable of?
Well, whacking journalists is a stretch.
Yeah, but it struck me, I think I said it at the time, as just the kind of slimy thing that Mayborn would do. You know, we must protect the... true evil is done in the guise of good.
Yeah.
You know, oh, it's all for the good of the country. Therefore, this man must die because we're protecting the country. No, it doesn't work like that.
Perhaps in their little world it does. Mm. We also get one of the great quotes from Jack, where he goes on about there's another O'Neill in the military.
Oh, yes.
It's O'Neill with two L's, and the other one is only one L. It's a nice reference to the movie, and the fact that some people said, oh, he's playing the same character, but technically he's not. Unless you just argue that it is the same character with different spelling.
Well, I'm assuming that it is meant to be the same character.
Oh, yeah, it's meant to be, but then you wonder, why change it?
Probably a typo on the pilot.
And they just left it like that.
And then realised, oh, crap, we screwed up. Oh, well, let's drop it in sort of randomly into the season two.
As if we did it deliberately.
And then we move on to Bane with irritating perky kid.
It's never
one of your favourites?
No, not one of my favourites. Mind you, having large plastic insects, you know, jump about on people and sting them is never a good thing.
I thought they were large CGI insects.
I don't know if they were CGI or not. I mean...
The flying ones were, I thought.
Oh, the flying ones were, but the one that were stuck on Tilk's back when Jack were going to shoot it, I always assumed that was a model.
And I don't... Looking at it, I think I said it at the time, I don't know if you added it out, and it's not a major spoiler... Does seem to be a reference to the Aratus bug in Atlantis.
Yeah, that's right. The Aratus bug, in the first episode it appeared, was a model. And the second time it appeared, they CGI'd it. So I guess in this episode, you know, years before Atlantis came along, that was just a giant bug model.
Well, you never know. They might have used the same bug model.
Might be a real thing from some South American genetics lab, just waiting to burst out and take over the world, or be the star of a sci-fi Saturday movie.
They're pretty awful.
Well, I love them. They're incredible. The Day the Earth Stopped. I watched that last week.
The Day the Earth Stopped?
Yes. You can figure out what movie it's supposed to be based on.
Yeah, but... I think I saw an advert for that was flicking around on sci-fi. You know, Earth's rotation stops, disaster movie.
No. It's when an alien's come down to Earth and said they're going to destroy all the humans because you're dangerous to us giant robots.
It's a flagrant ripoff?
Yeah, but no Keanu Reeves. They had a large-breasted brunette instead, which I totally approved of.
Actually, the Keanu version wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
Yes, it was. Well, it was as bad as I thought it were going to be. Prefer the original, the black and white.
I still can't bring myself to watch Cloverfield.
That was pretty much as bad as I thought it would be. It was on Channel 4 a couple of days ago.
I'm glad I totally missed it. I wouldn't even waste a hard disk space on it.
No, you should watch it, because then you can cheer on as each person gets terribly slaughtered. And you're cheering on. Yes, he's dead. Next.
It's the Blair Witch monster. No. It's the Blair Witch alien. Shaky cam. I'll pass.
Okay.
Passing swiftly on from Bane with the aside reference, as you probably know, that the child subsequently plays the older version of Cassandra. That's why I recognised her in Bane, because I think I started actually watching regularly in season 3.
Yeah.
We come into our major arc, Chunky. Probably, I'm wondering, Toker Part 1 is episode 11. In original broadcast, did they take a mid-season break there?
I honestly don't know what Showtime did back then. The air dates say no.
Oh.
October 2nd, October 9.
Okay. Because I know nowadays, if they set up a two-parter like that, they'd leave it for a mid-season break.
Yeah. From the air dates, it looked like they had a month off. They didn't air any episodes in November that year. So it looks like Showtime pretty much had a more or less a continuous season. No 3-month break off in the middle.
Hmm.
And considering, you know, as an out-and-out pay channel, you would hope that's the way they do things.
One might. Good, solid arc episode. Both of them.
Oh, both of them, yeah. The first one is a little bit slow as it lays all the groundwork and we meet the new character, Martouf. And what's her name? Joseph Garchon, wasn't it?
Could have been Garchon. It's not actually mentioned in these little mini synopses.
Joseph Garshaw, which was played by Sarah Douglas, and Martouf and Lantesh, who were played by J.R. Bourne, who, even so early on, takes a shine to Samantha.
Oh, yes. Seems to recognise the old, Jalinar, you're not dead after all. Come here.
Just lie back and let me put this into your stomach and we can live happily ever after.
Hey, yeah, my girlfriend's back.
That quite extended scene of just them two talking on the dunes, up to the point where he really put his foot in his mouth by actually saying it should be.
It's so sweet, it's so pleasant, you like me, I like you, blah, 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 blah. Great, would you like to be a host?
Yeah. Up until then, he was doing pretty well.
He was well in there, and then it's just like, oh, dear, you stupid little stop talking and just kiss her.
We also see the return of the communications device in this double episode as well. The little golden ball.
In a cell phone form.
Yes, a mobile ball.
Yeah, we've gone from sort of the pub plasma TV form to the cell phone form.
You see, in Going Postal, the mobile mast.
I haven't watched it yet.
You watch How Shut Up then?
Yes, well, I have read the book 3 times, but. Yeah.
Well, this one's once in the book.
twice with my eyes and once with my ears. But no, I've not. I'm waiting for another Discworld fan to watch it with. And since the DVD's not out until August, I'm prepared to wait that bloody long.
Fair enough. It's coming out on Blu-ray.
Of course it was shot in HD. I recorded it in bloody HD.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy Going Postal on Blu-ray until it drops in price anyway.
Or that much more expensive.
I'm not going to pay more than 15 quid for a Blu-ray, period, end of story. Unless it's a 20-odd season box set.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, I've got a limit on it. Oh, wait, I'm in no rush.
For me, it's the price differential. If it's not more than, like, 10%, then I'll probably buy the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
But, Toker, we'll probably have to edit.
Yeah, I will edit most of that out.
What's
we get
this stuff?
this wee white man. Pretty sure that were a joke about the Lone Ranger.
It says, okay. Tonto, listen, what's wrong, Tonto? They say, you know, can the Indian horde come 10,000 strong? Like, we're in big trouble, Tonto. Like, what's this wee stuff, Paleface?
Yeah, that's it. That's the one. Yeah, we get the reappearance of Jacob. You know, we know he's dying of cancer. And
very quickly, considering the apparent time lapse between Secrets and this.
Oh, yeah. Like I say, he left it to the last minute to tell her.
Fine, it won't be for months yet, and then 3 episodes later, to us certainly, maximum time lapse, maybe a month, he's terminally ill in the hospital and she's off world.
I suppose they could argue it progressed a bit faster than they anticipated. They can say anything, can't they? Really.
The cancer moved at the speed of plot.
Yeah, exactly.
I know that's a phrase I use a lot.
So we get a pretty good scene as Jacob is told about Gord and everything, and then meets his future guest. And meets a host, which is a little old lady.
Not an evil one, though.
No, not an evil old lady. She's probably got a very filthy mouth on, though. She seems that sort. Enjoys a pint and a dirty joke. And I think,
yeah, believe me, my mother's 72, and you should see some of the jokes she sends me.
Oh, well, I can remember in Shock and Horror when I saw me granny with a tattoo.
A tattoo?
Me granny had a tattoo, yes. She led an interesting young life, I'm told.
Let's draw a veil there, shall we?
Yes.
Thank you.
All turns out, well, anyway, the Tok'ra are willing to listen to the SGC, mainly because we supplied them a host for one of their, I think, the most revered Tok'ra. Not the leader, but was she the oldest?
Oh, heaven forfend, you know, to coin a phrase, if the Tok'ra had a leader, she definitely wouldn't be it.
No.
possibly the oldest. You know what, I'm not going into spoiler territory.
Yeah, I think she was regarded as probably the wisest of them.
That lovely line from Jacob when he wakes up, and you're like, holy Hannah, no arthritis. Because it's not something, okay, I mean, you accept the aliens, you accept the symbiote, you accept the whole stuff. And it's these little small touches and details that you're like, oh yeah, of course, why would there be?
Yeah, yeah. That's just a symptom of the body deteriorating. And if the symbiote can repair that. I mean, these days, if it was something like SGU did the same similar storyline, he'd be throwing away the Viagra. Don't need this anymore. Lieutenant James, come here.
Gods, I mean, did you have to go there?
Always.
Honestly, Mike.
Ah, yeah.
But, filthy-minded grandmothers.
But we're still not an explicit podcast. Although Podcast Stanley thinks different.
Podcast Ali thinks that. Are we on Podcast Ali?
I eventually got fed up waiting to get that feed fixed, so I submitted it.
And they took it?
Well, they said they'd take it. It was just a mess. They came up with a lot of suggestions what you should do to clean it up, and the suggestions were half a page. But as we know, the feed works. And it's just a god awful mess.
Spirits with the
engines.
Yes. Kind of. I would say shades of Voyager, but I don't think it was out yet.
You're right. This would be a Voyager episode, very much so.
But it reminds me of the Voyager episode with Chakotay and the his Sky Spirit. I have to say that he almost gets my sort of one-off character of the season.
What, T'Nani?
Yeah. He's just fun.
The actor does an outstanding job.
I'm not even sure what tribe he was originally. I think he probably mentioned it in the...
I don't know about tribe, but Rodney A. Grant was the actor. And his IMDb is awash with similar roles. But, you know, you play to your strengths, don't you?
Yeah.
You can't criticise anybody for that. He's probably made a very good living being himself.
I wonder if he played such an amiable sort of... did he ever sort of sell out and go for the riding the horse, shooting arrows at white man?
Oh, I'm sure he did.
I suppose it all pays the bills. You got to keep the wives in the style to which they become accustomed.
I say, No, I was just looking at his listings again. Genghis Khan, The Story of a Lifetime. So he is versatile.
That's true. Are you sure he played Genghis the can?
I don't remember Genghis getting across the Atlantic.
No, well, there may be some stuff we've missed from history.
You're right, because we know the Vikings were mucking about over there.
Certainly weren't Columbus that found it. We have a rumour about St. Brendan going over there in the 11th century.
Don't know him.
Well, no. Minor Irish saint, he wouldn't have necessarily been covered.
No. Even going to a Catholic school, that sort of thing weren't covered. Major saint, maybe, but not minor.
Sorry?
A major saint, yeah, but not a minor.
Spirits had the other thing, there was a TNG episode where there were these kids on the ship and they did a sort of shake the fisting in a worryingly similar to an obscene gesture and made people disappear. So it's just the fact that these guys can clap their hands together. It just harkens back to that for me, thinking about it.
I can't remember that episode.
Might have actually been an original series episode.
Oh, yeah. The original series had a bunch of kids. And, of course, you had Charlie X, who could pretty much do anything he wanted.
I suppose it's rather heavy on the environmental bias.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it takes a big stick and beats you over the head with it.
Yeah, which I suppose we might mention Voyager and indeed Star Trek generally, because it's not really the style of Stargate to beat you over the head with something. It's very much the TNG style, but not Stargate.
Well, there was Emancipation.
Sorry?
There was Emancipation.
Yeah, but that was episode 2.
They learned the lesson quickly.
Yeah, you do not lecture your audience or your audience will diminish.
Well, to be fair, Star Trek did one thing right. If they had an actress that looks like Christina Cox, they didn't cover her up in makeup and a shroud. They'd put her in a skin-tight Velcro outfit.
Yes, repeatedly across different seasons.
In fact, they'd build a whole episode around it just because they knew they were going to put her in the second or third season.
You'll have to remind me who Christina Cox is.
Christina Cox, she was, she was in Blood Ties of Canadian Vampire Series.
Mm-hmm. Saw that. No, you have to remember.
In the episode, she was the... Yeah, she was the wolf, wasn't she?
Sorry, you're back to Star Trek.
Or no, Stargate. Stargate. In Spirits, the wolf. They were the crow.
You confused me by happening series in mid-sentence. I was going to think, what Star Trek episode was you?
She might have been in a Star Trek episode.
Don't check.
Yeah, I've got to.
For God's sake.
Well, let's go on to the next episode, quick.
Touchstone. Unfortunately, maybe it's coming off the back of Spirits, but an even more flagrant environmental message. This is environmental feedback in the most severe and instantaneous fashion. And as I recall, towards the end of our commentary in this episode, I was ranting about, so hang on, the snow has all disappeared.
It was a terrible stormy night, and then all of a sudden there was a sunrise and everything was fine again. It's one hell of a device they've got there.
Isn't it? And we speculated about sort of satellite subcontrol systems, etc. Which, in fairness, the SGC mightn't have picked up. They didn't have Starship technology.
No, they didn't, no.
So, I mean, there may have been a massive satellite.
I would have thought that were the only way that sort of system could work, unless the whole planet was built.
Hmm.
If it was an actual artificial construction, that could just simply be the control node for it.
Hmm.
But then that wouldn't explain how that affected the Earth's weather.
No, it wouldn't, would it?
No.
There's no satellite system in there, although it may have the ability to affect things locally. Without, perhaps it is quite powerful, but you get a sort of feedback through the satellite system, and without the satellite system to keep in checks and balances, you get that horrendous thing that happened to the Earth's weather.
Yeah, or else that could have been a huge coincidence.
Yeah, it's science fiction. We don't bother with coincidence. We just accept the super technology.
Yeah.
You know, be Sheldon on this.
I don't watch that show, you know that.
Sorry.
But you do talk about it often enough so that I know the reference.
I like it. I can't watch Supernatural because I'm up to the second last episode of season 4. So I watch Big Bang if I'm feeling down.
Yeah, fair enough.
Mm, thank you for not making a sexual reference.
I say Touchstone, though, I didn't mind that episode. I quite liked it. Yeah, there were things wrong with it. But again, I think, you know, the work they did on the planet to make it look like a world, the sunrise, I assume it was sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, beautiful artwork.
Yeah, but again, it's chances are it was probably a redress set from the Night and Day, the Brock and Divide planet.
That's what I mean. I'm impressed with what they can do.
I suppose you can sit down and plan this stuff out and say, we'll be filming... I don't even know if the episodes were filmed in order.
Normally, a series like this, they'd be working on 2 or 3 episodes at any one time, wouldn't they? So that they can double up settings and locations if they need to.
But and we haven't even mentioned Mayborn.
Well, no, that's a surprising thing. He's in the episode. He comes across as a bad guy. Then he almost gets you to believe that he's as surprised as anybody else. That the gate isn't there. That's where I put it. But that's where I moved it later on. Yeah, you know, when someone gives you an explanation and you've got to really think about what they're saying, that's where I put the gate last Friday.
Yeah.
Did you move it? And you've got to ask the obvious question. Did you move it after that? Because they're not going to volunteer that sort of information.
Well, no, they're evil.
And yet, you know, he points out that the people behind this are not government. They're civilian. They're probably richer than the government and they don't mind getting their hands dirty.
Or indeed, happily running people over with jeeps.
Quite likely.
Okay, we haven't established that. I don't think we ever do. Or a feeling. It's a sort of...
It's mentioned in one of your favourite episodes from season 8, 7 or 8.
Oh, okay.
We'll get there.
We'll get there about 2012 or so, I think.
Yeah, assuming the world has intended by then.
It's not showing any imminent signs of ending at the minute.
Well, it didn't in the movie either.
Yes, it did. It was in a movie called The Day the Earth Stopped. Are we in a movie?
It could be. This could all be a dream.
The Australians certainly believe that. The Aboriginals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right, okay, what's next?
What's next is Bad Science.
The Black Hole.
Yes, The Black Hole. Purely speculative. and any astrophysicist worth his PhD would be laughing at it. I mean, taking a basic premise and so-called common knowledge regarding time dilation and black holes and just spun a story off it. Not that it's a bad story, it's not.
No, there's some good elements there. I mean, we get some Jack backstory of his time in the Special Forces.
And through being captured and your man vecking off on him.
Yeah, and Colonel Cromwell, who used to be his friend, who left him because he claimed he thought he was dead. And then only found out later that he'd been captured.
Yes. Whoops, sorry, thought you were dead. Jack doesn't strike me as the forgiving type in that sort of scenario.
Which, you think about it, you've seen SGU, where Greer is left for dead.
Yeah.
And yet on the surface, when he met up with Scott again, he wasn't perfectly whoopee-doo, but he wasn't angry about it, unless... But then.
Well, I suppose from that perspective, he didn't have any choice about Greer. I mean, Jack's argument in that situation is that your man could have come back from. Young couldn't.
Well,
he weren't in control of the ship.
We saw the events in SGU. You know, we're only seeing two people's point of view in this A Matter of Time.
Probably because budget didn't allow.
Yeah, it would have been rather tricky to have Black Hawks and Apache gunships flying over the Middle East.
They could have used stock footage.
Oh, yeah. Jag used to do it all the time. Even to the point where the plane changed models halfway through the shot. They take off in a Phantom and land in an F-18.
Oh,
that's clever.
Isn't a Phantom the F-117?
No, the F-4 is a Phantom.
Twin rear tail fins?
The F-18 has got twin. The Phantom has got twin engines. But you recognise a Phantom, it's got a very drooped down nose and angled wings. It were the workhorse of the Vietnam and Korean conflict.
But again, more stuff you'll have to cut out. You just create more crazy stuff. Black hole, interesting physics effects. As you said, some nice background Jack stuff.
Yeah. And we meet Major Paul Davis, played by Colin Cunningham in this episode. Turns out to be a semi-recurring character.
I have no actual memory of that man.
Yeah? No?
No.
He was the bloke who was telling Hammond what was what.
Oh, this is the head of the sort of ground troop guys.
The
guy who actually went in.
Oh, no. He didn't go in. He was his, if you like, his commander on the in the field.
Adjutant?
Kind of. We see him in later episodes, so we'll go over. We'll talk about him again.
Okay. The Fifth Race, an episode you're quite keen on, if memory serves.
Yes, I like The Fifth Race.
It's nice. It's very much a Jack episode. I mean, everyone else is a minor note to the Symphony of Jack.
Oh, yeah, they're just running around and playing off his one-liners.
By the way, if you edit that nice line by me out, I will kill you. Which means I'm going to have to listen to this after you put up.
Oh, dear.
No, I quite enjoy. I just, so many other podcasts. You see the deterioration of Jack, but he still remains fundamentally Jack. And at the end, when he's sort of, he can't really speak at all. He very much plays the sort of lost little boy in it, trapped in his body kind of thing.
Yeah, but amazingly, Jack can still carry over the sarcasm, even when he's not saying anything. It's just there.
Oh, it's fundamentally Jack. If you cut him in half, you see sarcasm written through the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, when he wants to, you know, get them out of the room and leave him alone, just a little scribble on a piece of paper, gives it to Daniel. Oh, right, and off he goes. Like I say, we get all the funnies with Jack's word salad as the ancient language takes over. The boxing with Teal'c, which is hilarious. You know, trying to teach a warrior like Teal'c, who probably knows more ways to kill you with his hands.
With his little finger.
Yeah. Then just stand there explaining it to him, and so Teal'c just smacks you. You know, that's how you fight. If a bloke wants to, you know, just mouth off at you, you just put him down straight away.
And you got the, that's what I was going to say, sorry. Aphasia.
Yeah.
Is fundamentally what it is. So you could say it touches on mental health issues.
Yeah, you could, but, you know, it's not as if they don't really address anything like that. You could argue that that's covered in more detail in the Brock and Divide.
Or Need. Sorry, damn. I may have said something positive about Need. Shoot me. This is going a lot better than last season.
Well, yeah, we actually put a bit of thought into it.
We're expecting Scott. We never got him. A Serpent Song definitely gets my vote for... Well, I'd nearly say it's a better teaser in terms of wanting you to watch more than the teaser to Line of Duty.
Yeah.
He said, scrolling backwards with me.
I think there must be something about spaceships, explosions, in a science fiction series. That works. Call me crazy, but it works.
But that look on Jack's face towards the opener where he's pondering, because Boff is like, help me, and he's thinking,
yeah, can I kill him? Can I kill him?
You can clearly see the thought crossing his mind.
Is anybody looking?
Will I just shoot the bastard anyway?
Jack just turns around, points at the horizon. What's that? And they all look and, oops. He shot himself with my gun. Okay.
Telepathically, he used a hand device.
He said, help me, so I shot him. That's what I thought he wanted.
He was
in pain. It was humanitarian, honest.
Or guildetarian.
Yes, the once great mighty Apophis is pretty much lost all his followers, all his ships. He's on the run from, who was it? Was it Sokar?
Okay.
Yeah, the new big bad, who it seems is, you know, is 10 times as worse than Apophis ever was.
Yeah, you know, you put one down, a stronger one comes back up.
Oh, yeah, just the idea of being able to send a message through the iris in that manner. Not a radio message or anything. So Sokar basically couldn't get anything physical through, but he got energy through, which he could manipulate to form the face and the voice, which is so far beyond anything we can do. Maybe the Asgard could do it, but I don't think anybody else could in this galaxy.
Well, no, there are other people. We haven't introduced them yet, so...
Mm.
Let's leave them.
Yeah, okay.
The Nox wouldn't bother.
No, that's beneath them. You know, well, why would we want to do that? We're perfectly happy in our floating city. In our shaggy, naturalistic, hippie outfits. And no conditioner.
Quite.
In this and all, we get the line from Jack, you know, talking to Frasier. Let me know when he dies. You know, no sympathy at all. Which is quite understandable.
Well, no. I'm very surprised that Daniel has any sympathy for Apophis, considering what he did to his wife.
Oh, yeah. I think Daniel, more than anybody, is influenced by the actual host, you know, coming through.
Probably because Daniel can actually speak the language.
That helps, yes.
Daniel being the only one who can speak the language, even though it's a dead language, no one's ever pronounced it.
Ah, yeah, but like I say, he figured that out in a couple of sentences with his Mrs. on Abydos.
Yes, well, sexual attraction can do wonders for linguistic skills. Oh, so that's how you pronounce it. Great, right. Now, let me just walk out here to say, let's get it on.
Right then. Holiday. Holiday, yes.
Good one. Fun episode.
It was a fun episode. And, Michael
and
Shanks.
Playing about five parts.
He did it okay, you know, Michello. Yeah, Michello, that's
he
right.
He did it better than okay. I didn't recognise him until you pointed it out. Oh, was that Daniel? Whoops.
It was played for laughs, isn't it? There's no ifs or buts about it.
Sure. Well, I suppose after the Darkness of Serpent's Song, which is a fairly sort of grim episode.
Yeah.
Something light and fluffy like Holiday. I liked the idea of the actors being able to play each other. I mean, Jack, Teok being Jack and Jack being Teok.
Oh, and yeah, and the head shaving. You will not shave my head. We could be like this for the rest of our lives. I don't care, you're still not shaving my head.
That last little comment by Jack after he gets back into his own body. I'm almost expecting an oy vey from him at that point. Shave my head. It is. You expect a sort of Jewish expression of exasperation.
Well, they fit so well.
Mm. Moving on, because we've been doing this for quite a while.
Might be quite a long episode, this.
Show and tell. Non-perky child. More sort of golden child, freaky sort of...
Oh, we're on show and tell. I thought it was one false step next.
Sorry?
I thought it was one false step next.
Oh, I think my brain wanted to skip it.
Okay, oh, that's fine. Not fair.
We'll do one false step, fine. Leave that in.
One false step is worth it. Just for Daniel and Tilk's line. Daniel, I feel like I've been here before. And Tilk saying, that is correct, Daniel Jackson. Yesterday, when we first arrived on this planet. It's worth it just for that line, them lines.
You might want to drop that in, maybe, if you're dropping anything in. But given the amount of stuff we've recorded, and despite some editing, I'm still sure we've got at least 45 minutes so far of usable stuff.
The episode...
I do like... There's nice character moments. The episode is definitely weird and very much a one-off.
Yeah.
But the arguments... I mean, Jack and Daniel arguing about the plant. Clearly, it's their sort of... You know, it's the noise and it's increasing the aggression and it's driving them a bit batty, but... Jack becomes more Jack.
Yeah, they provide a reason for everybody's behaviour. Whether or not it's a good enough reason is debatable. But like you say, it was an interesting episode. And again, 22 episodes in a season, try something a little bit different. If it doesn't work, then no harm done.
No, because if your fans have followed you for the previous 18 episodes, they're not going to drop out at this point.
Yeah.
Tried it in episode 3, then you might lose a fair chunk of people for the rest of the season. Oh,
if you tried it in episode 3, season 1, you're done.
you get 4 episodes broadcast, 10 episodes filmed, and a possible wrap-up movie 2 years later.
Very much so.
Don't think there's anything more we can add to show and tell that we didn't actually say when we covered it. Again, sorry, not show and tell. Sorry, one fell step.
Back on one fell step. There ain't a lot to say about it. I mean, we talked about the acting, you know, from the people that played the aliens. Fantastic mime work. You know, you really felt the emotion coming off some of them, especially I think Joe, who was the main alien.
Oh, the guy that they put in the scanner.
No, that was I think that was Jim. I could be wrong.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, let's go to show and tell then.
Show and tell. Non-perky child, golden child, style child.
Oh, yeah. As I was saying. Dying child.
Yes.
I think we said this at the time, that you've got to admire the mother who was willing to sacrifice her child to help somebody she didn't know just because she felt that was the right thing to do.
Move back to what I was saying and talk about screwing up the intel. He's like, oh, there might be a few, maybe a group of perhaps 12 at most.
Oh, on the planet, yeah.
And so 400 of the bloody things.
They were fortunate that the Ritu, you know, terrorist hit squad, you were only 5 members. Because if there'd been any more, what, 28 levels to the SGC? And they could pretty much go anywhere where they wanted. They could have took out the whole base within seconds. No need to plant explosives and put them on a timer.
Why put them on a timer? They're a suicide squad.
Well, put it this way, they gave us time to defend the base, didn't they? That's what I'm saying. Yeah. If there'd been more of them, they could have, you know, all struck in one go. There wouldn't have been time to do anything.
Well, I wonder, was the Ritu weapon actually part of the body? Or surgically implanted? You know, the whole energy ball firing thing.
You saw that funny thing sticking out the door. You assume that were the weapon and not part of the body.
Mm. You never see that weapon again either.
Luckily, it exploded. When Sam were tossing their grenades down the hallway, bouncing them off tables.
Oh, yes. Sam, Tiddlywinks expert.
Apart from that, not a lot more to say. Jack and the young boy, Chris and Charlie, some moments there. And, of course, you got the happy ending at the end.
Yes, where he decides to go off and go house. Since he doesn't reappear, as far as I can tell, I get the impression the blending didn't take.
Or else and never thought it was worth bringing him back.
Or else he went off and found a regular gig on some other show and wasn't free to come back to SG-1.
Could be. That's normally why guest characters don't reappear, because they're committed somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. 1969.
Yes. A good episode. A funny episode.
If only on my... it's still one of my personal favourite bits. Daniel with the oh-so-scenery-chewing 1948 War Eagles Dare German guard accent.
No, it wasn't embarrassing to watch. It was hilarious to watch. I mean, the guy's a linguist. No, that's not linguist. That's it. He's a linguist, and he came across so fake. You know, said at the time, if he'd been wearing lederhosen and holding a beermeister or something, you know,
and a sausage, bratwurst.
Yeah, bratwurst. Yeah, it couldn't have been more fake German if he'd have tried.
I've had bratwurst in Germany.
Really? With sauerkraut?
No, sauerkraut is basically cabbage. I had that in Prague, oddly enough. But sorry, I've derailed your train of thought there. yes, I mean, Teok's little... some lovely moments for all of them. Teok's little moment, you know, because he's having the discussion about the gold symbol on his head. You know, I actually gestured and made a little circling noise around my circly motion of my forehead there. See, for those of you, we're not doing vidcast, folks. The guy in the hippie van, it must have hurt, and he looks like extremely.
It's an episode where every character gets to do something. And apart from the actual character, you know, the humour in the characters, we just get a good story. Time travel story. You know, there have been hundreds of time travel stories in sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going back in time, trying to solve your own problems. This one worked very, very well. They went back in time through a little quirk of the gate technology, which is used again in later episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often, actually.
We shall see in subsequent seasons.
Yeah, and it gives us a reasonable idea how they solved the problem and tied that into what we knew about the Stargate program.
Mm-hmm.
Did I mention it's a funny episode?
Oh, it is fun.
Yep.
Sam in hippie clothes.
All of them in hippie clothes. It's, and the bus and the music specially written for the episode. You know, I didn't say I liked it. I just said it fit rather well. And I was impressed with the fact that a fan of the series who was a musician actually wrote the music just for this episode.
Which is nice. I presume we were. Do you think he contacted them, or they contacted him when?
I read it somewhere. I think producer on the show knew him, and knew he was a fan, and got him to write it. No idea if he got paid for it, or what rights were held or not held. I suppose it's going to be cheaper than actually, you know, licensing some known music.
Well, yeah, especially for DVD release.
Yeah.
Not the DVD. Were DVD? No, they weren't. Not when this were airing.
99. Yeah.
Have I been buying DVDs that long?
Yeah, I had DVD player back in 99. I think I got mine in 98, or is it 97?
I got mine when The Matrix came out.
Well, I got mine from America.
Hmm.
So that was a good year before they came over in the UK.
Fair enough. Moving on to Out of Mind Part 1, a.k.a. The Clip Show.
Or the season finale.
Still more of a clip show there. As season finales go, I think it's I said at the time, I think it's a little weak.
It is. I mean, first off of the episode is very weak because it is a clip show. If this was the penultimate episode, you could forgive him for that.
I know. In memory serves from part two, there is a lot of good stuff in there, but even so, it doesn't warrant the first 22 minutes.
No, it doesn't. But once Jack breaks free, gets Sam, and gets Daniel, and they go on the rampage around the base.
Well,
not for long.
And we cut back to Teok.
Yeah. And to be honest, they spend more of the time hiding behind convenient wall panels.
Yes, the convenient wall panel, bracket, TM, bracket.
You're going to say not just once, not just twice, three or four times.
Well, in fairness, it doesn't count if you have to include the bits where they're hiding behind convenient wall panels in clips. Actual new convenient wall panel hiding only happens about two or three times.
Yeah, and for all that hiding, they get caught because the main bad guy has got a cloaking device and he's standing in the middle of the gate room, or the fake gate room.
Yes.
Just to appear as if by magic.
As if by magic? Hathor appeared.
Yes.
Just traumatised countless Mr. Ben fans.
what costume would you like to today? Hathor's. Oh. I didn't think you were that.
Stop, please. That brings up a very disturbing mental image.
Yeah, that wouldn't be on Watch With Mother, would it?
No. Well, so it improves at the end, but not a very, very poor opening. And I think subsequent season finale, I don't think they hit as weak again, really.
No, Stargate has always been known for a good cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose this is probably the exception.
Well, the cliffhanger is not bad. I mean, she's standing there holding an adult, fully mature girl going like, right, who's coming to mummy?
Like I say, it doesn't build up as strong as you'd want. It gets there in the end, but all the anticipation isn't there.
Mm. Indeed.
Your favourite episode from this season, then? If you want to pick just one or a couple?
I definitely got 1969. I suppose I'm kind of torn between 1969 and Holiday.
Yeah.
Mm. Really. Matter of Time, The Bad Signs irritates me. Fifth Race is okay, but I don't think it's got great rewatchability from that perspective. No, I mean, Line of Duty, for what it sets up, it's a nice episode, but no, I can tell you episodes I don't like.
Well, my favourite then.
Okay.
Which you're pretty sure you know, which is my favourite. My favourite is Fifth Race.
Mm-hmm.
Not by a huge amount, but I like it because of its place in the arc.
Hmm.
Second and third, I'd probably go for 1969 and Secrets.
You like the Jewel A story?
Yeah, I quite like that one. We had a poll running as well. Mm. We got 12 responses, which is not shabby.
No.
Not brilliant, but not shabby. The Fifth Race came first with 50% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
1969 came second. Got votes for Serpent's Lair, Thor's Chariot, the Tok'ra, parts 1 and 2 together. And then we got one other answer, which I don't know because it was the other answer. So it literally could be anything. It could have been watch TNG.
Didn't sort of fill in, or was there a fill in?
The poll doesn't actually. I think you have to pay to see what they wrote.
God.
Yes. It has the poll has limited functionality unless you upgrade.
Facebook.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't Facebook. It was a poll daddy.
A friend of a colleague of mine wrote that site and sold it for something like €600,000.
Wow! Excellent.
Result, eh? He wrote it as a free site, and then someone wanted it, so he said, okay. And they said, well, we'll give you this for all rights in perpetuity. And he was like, okay, thank you, bye.
You look at ICQ, that sold for 300 million. Then within 6 months, there were three or four instant messenger systems, which were better.
Yeah.
The dot-com bubble, you know, when that finally burst, some sanity returned to the world. Okay, worst episodes.
Oh, I went first last time. You go first.
Simple. Need.
Was there ever any doubt?
No, not really. Bane came pretty close.
For me, Gamekeeper came fairly close.
Yeah.
It irritated me for no discernible reason that I could really put my finger on. But Need was just, oh, God, it was a slog. I think the fact that, didn't we have technical problems with Need and we had to re-record the first 10 minutes about 5 times? No, actually, that was Gamekeeper. We had technical problems with so maybe it's not the episode. Maybe it's the fact that we had to redo several chunks of it. We had technical problems with Gamekeeper and with Prisoners.
Yeah, that's right.
Definitely
yeah.
With Prisoners.
Yeah, because we had to resync ourselves when Tilk was choking that bloke.
Yeah, about 3 times.
Strangely enough, we've had an iTunes review from a guy by the name of Sapphire, who actually enjoyed Need.
Oh dear.
And Prisoners. I've been, you know, trying to figure a way out to get in touch with her, you know, ask her to actually contribute.
That was I suppose, a proper state of the podcast. It's a season review with some quick notes on, oh, by the way, in case you didn't cop, yes, Need was also my least favourite episode. It was such a slog to get through. God, I will never watch it again. Not even, even nostalgically, if I live to 200, I still won't look at the damn thing again.
You've rewatched it for the podcast and that's it.
I've taken one for the team.
That's what she said.
To contact us, folks, this has been the State of the Podcast, the end of season 2. We will be back with you next week with part 2 of Out of Mind, which is the season opener for season 3. And I'll just go a quick run through the contact details. You can email us on gatecast@phasecast.com. You can get us on Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter at TheGateCast, which I admittedly forgot to pull up this evening because I'm sleep deprived. But usually we will tweet when we start recording. So and anything which pops in, I'll make a point of mentioning. That's TheGateCast, one word, no space, on Twitter. Again, you can contribute feedback on the main website, gatecast.phasecast.com. On the subject of feedback, I should check. But other than that, thanks for saying through season 2. We'll be starting season 3 shortly. And it's still kind of fun. I don't know how much of this we're doing for you lot and much of this we're doing for ourselves at this point.
Well, the odds are, without this, I probably wouldn't have been rewatching SG-1 right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, considering how much...
enjoying bits of it.
How many other DVD box sets I've got lined up to watch series. It may only be an hour a week, occasionally 2 hours a week, but I've probably been watching something else. But when you start talking about an episode, just as if you're on a forum or any other sort of social group talking about a show you like, you get more out of it. You're hearing other people's opinions, and it's always good. You may not always agree, but it's interesting anyway.
We have a follower on Twitter called Paul Burbridge.
Woohoo!
Paul, feel free to contribute or tweet or whatever. But I imagine this thing would notify us if he had.
Yeah, hopefully season 3 be settled with a Twitter, Dan. Still got our Facebook page. We've been we're on Podcast Alley now, although the searching for Gatecast on Podcast Alley still keeps bringing up.
The other Gatecast?
The role-playing game, World of Warcraft podcast.
That's pretty much it, folks. Email us, tweet us, visit our Facebook page, join the Facebook group, give feedback. Any feedback is welcome, positive, negative, neutral.
Yep, even talk about the weather. It's amazing how many...
God knows we did today.
Yeah, it's amazing how many posts on Facebook or, hey, it's sunny.
On that note, and I think I did enough bits of sign off that you can probably construct something.
I probably can indeed, yep.
Okay, God, that's now 43. That is so much better than last year. I tend to say last year. It was last year's, actually, because it was December.
Yeah.
It was actually last year.
Time flies.
Okay. On that slightly depressing note, I'm going to hang up. Fare thee well.
See you then, Alan. See you, folks. Thanks for joining us on Season 2. See you on Season 3.
Indeed.
You've been listening to Gatecast, presented by Alan, Mike and Scott. Visit us at gatecast.facecast.com.